Big Noon Kickoff presents Bear Bets. I'm your host, the Bear, Chris Felica, along with Jeff Schwartz, Sammy P, and Will Hill will join us in a little while for the gambling group chat. So we got three full weeks left, right? 11, 18, 25, then conference championship day, and then bowl season and complete chaos and opt-outs will be upon us. So
today is November 9th. The portal opens December 1st. All madness starts in the portal.
How time flies when you're having fun.
So I know.
Kind of a week here where we've kind of looked into the future at that Big Ten three-way tie break of if Penn State beats Michigan and Michigan beats Ohio State, the tiebreaker situation there, which I think a lot of people think is like college football playoff rankings, but it's not. It comes down to like the combined winning percentage of your opponents from the other division. And the fact that Penn State played Iowa and beat Iowa, like that's giving them the edge right now, because Iowa has the best record in the West compared to the opponents of the Michigan and Ohio State. So Penn State, a lot to play for this week. You could say that if they pull an upset, they maybe become the favorite to reach the Big Ten championship game.
Possibly. I don't think they're going to pull that upset, so we don't have to worry about that. But yeah, I mean, look, I think the country probably is rooting for them to beat Michigan this weekend, because that story continues to manifest itself in ways we never thought possible, where now, you know, Connor Stallions is a vacuum salesman, and the story's coming out. You know, Michigan, I'll tell you what, man, they're given like an A-plus example of how to muddy the waters with sort of letting out stories that really are related to what they did, but not really, right?
Correct. Like, yes.
And they're doing a really good job of this. Now, look, if they broke the rules, then they should get in trouble. Like, I have a very lukewarm take on it. Like, if they broke the rules, they should get in trouble. Coaches sharing information with other coaches is sort of like happens behind the scenes.
Yes.
That's not anything new.
Correct.
You know this. I mean, you talk to coaches every weekend. You've been in this business very long. You know how it works. So the idea that Ohio State and Purdue and these schools like got together to give information, that's sort of normal. Now, does it break the sportsmanship clause in the Big Ten? I don't know. But the fact is, if Connor Stallions was in fact having people or himself recording signs from the silence, whether it was impactful or not, I've seen the argument, well, it's not impactful, so what does it matter? Did they break the rules or not? If they did, they're going to be punished. If not, they won't be punished. Like, to me, I'm so indifferent to this, because that's as simple as it is. Did they break the rules or not? If they did, should they be punished? I say yes. I don't know what the punishment is. I really don't know. I don't have a great answer for that. But all this other stuff around it really has nothing to do with the fact of whether or not they broke the rules.
You two things. Impactful.
Yeah.
I love how they're saying it's not impactful, this junior assistant or whatever. Like, he was standing right next to your defensive coordinator and your coordinator on the field, like, telling him what's coming.
Yeah.
I think you made the determination there that it's kind of impactful what he was doing.
Yes. And I think that there's going to be a little bit of plausible deniability for Harbaugh knowing what's happening. I mean, they're going to try to put, the argument is basically right that like Connor Stallions did this on his own. Harbaugh just told him, you give us the signs, you get the signs for us. Right. Or someone told him that's your job. Then he went about it his own way to break the rules, which is certainly possible. I give them that idea. But the idea that Michigan came out yesterday, well, he was not impactful. No, come on. There's video. There's video of him next to coordinators helping them discern and decode the signals. So, like, just don't BS us. You know what I mean? Like, we see the video. And so, again, I don't really care, man. I'm laughing every day at the new information coming out, because it continues to be a hilarious college football story. But just don't lie to us about it, man.
And that's the thing, like, There is a rule. There is a rule against being in an opponent's stadium videotaping.
Yes.
That there's a rule that apparently looks like it was broken.
Yes.
There was no, how they're, it's two different things.
Correct.
Like, and that's what you talk about Michigan trying to money. Like, they throw you, all coaches shit. That's gone on forever. What Michigan is doing or did.
Yeah.
That is something completely different that there is a rule against. So that's what I can't grasp, people who like, oh, it's the same. No, it's not the same. It's two different things.
And I think the hardest part, again, I mentioned this, I think, in this podcast before, the hardest part for me is figuring out how much it actually mattered. Now, it mattered more than it did not, right? Like, if you know what's happening, it's an advantage. Again, Michigan is so good and they're so talented and they're well coached. It's like, how much did it actually matter in games when they win, you know, 50 to 10? Probably not very much. But does it matter when they play Ohio State? Because they couldn't beat Ohio State for so many years. All of a sudden they can. Now, the counter to that is they have better football players now, which is absolutely true. They have much better football players. So that to me is just kind of my football brain on it. Like, I just don't know how much it actually helped them win or lose. And that's probably how they're not going to, you know, how they may or may not decide to punish them. But again, like, there's two separate things. There's the NCAA violation, and then there's also the Big Ten sportsmanship clause. Those are two different things, right? The NCAA is not deciding anything right now. Will the Big Ten act, Bear? I don't think they will.
I think they'll act in a way where they put some sort of punishment out there that is appealable by Michigan, and nothing will happen, and Jim Harbaugh will be gone to the NFL by the time anything happens.
I'm with you there.
And which I don't want to say that's wrong or right, but I just don't like that any potential punishment and penalty will be down the road with maybe a group affecting a group of players that were not there when this was going on.
Absolutely.
So that I don't like.
And which I guess the downfall of the kind of the NCAA system, right? Like, if you punish the coaches just leave and go somewhere else. Now, they have a show clause, obviously, but we've seen coaches go, you know, Pete Carroll went to the NFL, right? Like, you can avoid the show clause by going to the NFL, and then who gets affected? The players and coaches left behind. So I hope they don't go that direction. But I do hope, Bear, that we pick a lot of winners this week. You have a pile of picks
for
college football this week. And again,
guys,
pile
of crap.
These are wagers Bear's actually making, because nobody in their right mind will tell you to bet Rice at UTSA. UTSA favored by 14.5. Total is 58. Rice is 4-5 overall. They're 2-3 in conference. The Owls are 7-2 against the spread this season. They just lost to SMU, but they did cover. UTSA is 6-3 overall. They're 5-0 in conference. They're only 3-6 against the spread this season. Where are you going here, Bear?
Well, you know, the only games that Rice has been beaten double digits were by Texas when they covered and South Florida. So that gets to the ETS success. But I think people, kind of with Frank Harris being out early in the year for UTSA, I think people maybe kind of thought they were in for a down year, maybe slept a little bit on them. But since Harris has come back, 5 straight wins, most of them by at least 2 touchdowns, at least 36 points in every game. And Rice's defense has struggled against most of the good teams that they have played all year. So I laid 14.5 here with UTSA at home.
What an incredible logo back here. Look at this thing. Look at this.
Rice.
It's unbelievable. It's awesome. The owls, just owls everywhere. I love it so much.
It's like the TripAdvisor.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Frank Harris is really good. And for to mention the guys that have, and we were actually, Sammy was on this earlier, right, about the Frank Harris injury information. Mm-hmm. We kind of made some money. But with him being back, it changes what UTSA is. And they can score a ton of points, which they did last season. Frank Harris was great. And luckily for my Ducks, we have their OC now, Will Stein, who's doing a great job at Oregon. All right, your second game of your schedule. Old Dominion plus 13.5 at Liberty. Total is 59. ODU 4-5 on the season, 3-3 in the Fun Belt. Monarchs are 6-3 against the spread this year. And 2 weeks ago, they lost to James Madison, who's undefeated by 3 points.
Yeah.
Liberty 9-0, and Liberty is 7-2 against the spread this season. What you thinking here?
I mean, I think Rick Guarani's team has a chance to get to 6 wins. They need to win 2 of their final 3. I think asking them to go on the road here and pull an outright upset over Liberty might be a little bit too much, but you mentioned the game against James Madison, lost by a field goal, lost by a field goal to Wake, lost a 1-score game at Marshall, lost a 1-score game to Coastal Carolina. So, like, they've been a tough out all year long, and it would not surprise me if they were a tough out again this weekend. So I took the Monarchs plus the 13.5 against a Liberty team, which has also been very good against the number this year.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have access to some analytics and some data. And when you look at, like, Liberty's schedule, and it basically breaks it down to where, like, if you're good, it's green. If you're red, obviously it's bad. And like, Liberty's schedule is everyone's red. Awesome. Just like red awesome. For offense, defense, overall, special teams. Like, they played nobody this year. It's like, it's not.
And if they've done what they should do.
And if ODU has a little bit of a pulse, I'm with you here. They should cover this game. All right, we're headed to the ACC conference now. You have North Carolina State at Wake Forest. Wake is getting 2.5 points here. Total of a low total here, 43.5. NC State 6-3 this season. They're 3-2 conference, just beat Miami 20-6. They also beat Clemson the previous week. They're a little hot right now. Both those wins were at home. Now they're on the road at Wake. Wake is 5-4 overall. Also 5-4 against the spread, and they're only 1-5 in conference. Where are you leaning here?
This is just a play against the Wolfpack here. Yeah. And you mentioned on it. They pulled consecutive home upsets where they were at least 6.5 point home underdog against Miami, against Clemson the last couple weeks. And now you're favored on the road against a bad Wake Forest team. So, you know, Wake isn't going to score a ton of points, but how many points will NC State score? Like a weird situation there with their quarterback, MJ Morris, yep, leaving the team. Now you go back to Brennan Armstrong, who was not good in the early part of the year. So I'm just going to hold my nose and tell me what the line and do what the line is telling me to do. And that's Wake Forest plus 2.5.
NC State 103rd in the country in points per drive on offense, and Wake is 111. I feel like when teams play like that, you just take the points, right? Because a defensive game, it's not
a lot of points. Maybe you, it's better. So some people would argue maybe taking Wake Forest money line is better, but I'd rather take the 2.5, and maybe you come up. Maybe they lose.
Okay. So you mentioned something interesting. So like, I always take the points over the money line.
With the dog, I take the points. With the favorite, I'll take the money line.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly because, yeah, like that's, I don't understand people that just like throw away points for a little bit more juice. I'd rather just take the points and pay the 110, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. And then we do money line parlays to make up the difference.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
So that always works out. Yeah. Well.
Every week. And without fail. All right. Back to the ACC for your fourth wager of the show. Duke at North Carolina. Carolina favored by 14. The total is 50.5. Duke is 6-3 for all. They're 3-2 in conference. They've struggled with quarterback Riley Leonard in and out of the lineup after a week 5 injury. Duke is 4-5 against the spread. Their rival, North Carolina, is 7-2. They're 3-2 in conference. They're 6-3 in spread. We know they've struggled a little bit as of recently.
Yeah, they dropped a couple of ACC games in incredible fashion after looking like a real threat to win that league and make the playoff. But you mentioned the Duke quarterback issues. I think that's the biggest storyline of the game. No Riley Leonard really limits what Duke can do on offense. And maybe everyone was a little too high on Duke at the start of the year after they beat a Clemson team that we knew really found out really wasn't as good as that preseason ranking was. I think it's just going to be hard for Duke to keep up here with the backup quarterback in a game in Chapel Hill against Drake May in a final game at North Carolina. Tar Heel still with a chance to get to the ACC championship game. I think this is one of those situations where you have an opportunity to kind of kick your rival a little bit while they're down and put up a big number and feel good about yourself. I think Mac Brown's team gets a big win on Saturday. And look, Mike Elko's, that defense has played really well Duke, but I just think this is going to be one of those games where ultimately the defense can't keep getting stops and getting the UNC offense off the field. So I laid 14.
Yeah, I was asking if Duke's defense can muddy this game up enough. But so is this an underplay too, under 15.5? Is this like a 28-14 game?
No. I think there's a good chance UNC gets into the upper 30s.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, even with Duke's defense. Wow. Yeah, Duke's defense is doing well. Let's get to the Big 12 now. It's weird saying that with a couple of these new teams here. But Cincinnati at Houston. Houston's favored by 2.5. The total is 54.5 here. Cincinnati is just 2-7. They have 0 wins in conference play. They're 3-6 against the spread. Houston's 5-4. They've won 2 conference games on their schedule. Houston is 5-4 against the spread. They just beat Baylor 25-24, while the Bearcats lost a close one at UCF. What are you thinking here, Bear?
I've seen the Bearcats in person this year. I was on the sideline for the Oklahoma game at the start of the year. So, and at the time, I knew I wasn't looking at one of the upper half teams in the Big 12. I did not think they would still be looking for their first Big 12 win of the season here. I did think they'd get one of those bad Big 12 teams by now, but at least they've been in some games. They've outgained some teams. It's not like Houston is blowing people out in the league. I mean, their two wins in the league have been by 1 and 2 points. So it's a good opportunity for the two newbies to pick up another conference win. I took the points here with UC. That offense is not fun to watch at all. I could get behind and under potentially here, which I know against a Dana Holgerson team sometimes you worry about, but it's not like Houston's offense is anything great whatsoever. So yeah, I took UC plus the 2.5 here in worse, bad, poorer, bottom feeding Big 12 teams.
It's no surprise, and we did discuss this, I think, a couple weeks ago on the podcast, that, you know, these teams that move up from Group of Five to Power Five, they struggle. Yeah. They struggle early.
They don't have a roster that's big.
And I think they think they're going to come in and kick butt. It's hard to do.
And I think if you want to get macro here, I don't want to say I'm happy to see this or it's justifying thing. My thoughts, confirmation bias, but it's clearly the Cincinnati team that a couple of years ago that made the playoff was good. There were a lot of guys drafted off of that team into the NFL. But when you have teams like UCF and Cincinnati and like, oh, we say it's not, it doesn't matter. We're winning all these games. We could be in the
does matter.
Cincinnati team needed a comeback in Indiana, and an Indiana team, I think, won one Big Ten game that year. Like, yes, in one game that you can beat like Indiana, but yeah. You put together Indiana, Michigan, the level, that's a lot different than playing
absolutely
whomever in the AAC that you were. So I think it goes to show that the people who all along have been kind of saying there's a lot of difference between these Group of Five teams and these Power Five teams. Even now when you're moving these teams into a Utah was the exception. TCU was
Utah struggled though originally.
And so did TCU.
Yeah, Utah struggled for 3 or 4 years when they first got in the Pac-12. Obviously they built that program back up, but it takes time. So Cincinnati, Houston, it just takes time to do that.
And next year it'll change a little bit too when OU and Texas leave the Big 12. When
Utah and Arizona are coming though.
Utah, Arizona State. Yeah.
So. Yeah, and the Colorado, obviously, who's obviously the best team in the country. all right, last game here that you have for now, a game I will actually be at. Memphis is at Charlotte. Charlotte's getting 10 points, total 51.5. Memphis is 7-2. They're 4-1 in the AAC. They've only covered 2 of their 9 games. They score a ton, and we know they play defense optional sometimes. Charlotte is 3-6. They're 2-3 in conference. They won 2 of the last 3 games. Charlotte is 5-4 against the spread. Where are you going here?
Memphis is one of those teams that I like playing against because I think people see their offense, and they maybe think to
score a ton of
couple years ago when they made the college football playoff and well, not the play the New Year's Six.
Yeah, they were 10-2 that year.
They think in North Hell on that offense, but this defense is really, really bad. And you're allowing 28 points a game. Last couple of weeks, you've allowed 50 and 42. And like, I don't know, Charlotte's capable of putting 50 or 42 on the board, but they are coming off their best performance of the year: 33 points, 6 yards of play. Granted, it was against Tulsa, who's not very good.
They were down 17-0 that game and fought back, which
yeah.
I know weirdly too much about Charlotte football, by the way.
Well, what do you think of my play here, Grubbins?
So, one thing I'm pulling up right here that's worth noting.
You're allowed to tell me it's bad.
Is Charlotte's defense is actually really good. I don't people realize that they're 26th in the country in passing yards allowed per game. Like, they have a legit defense. Their offense is getting better.
Now, I will, before you go down to the next thing, is that ranking an indicator of them playing bad offenses, or are they like legitimately have?
I think so. Their defensive coordinator came from the Ravens last year, Ryan Osborne. Like, he's a legit. They have a legitimate defense for the AAC. Right. Not like, you know, they're not going to compete nationally. And their offense is getting better each week because they're sort of figuring out quarterback. Like, their quarterback this year has been up and down. I like this play. Maybe I'll wager on it at the game. I try not to wager on games I told you I'll be at, but I'll take the kids here. It's a 2:00 kickoff. And it's just easy. Charlotte has an easy stadium getting out of.
Yes.
So I'm going to take the kids to the game. Beautiful. So let's recap where we're at.
Home.
Let's recap where we're at here. Bear has 6 wagers so far. He has UTSA minus 14.5, Old Dominion plus 13.5, Wake Forest plus 2.5, the Tar Heels of North Carolina minus 14, the Bearcats plus 2.5, and then ending with the Fighting Biff Pogies, the Charlotte 49ers at plus 10 here. If they win this game outright, we come in next week in a Biff Pogey shirt. The cutoff.
Bring me one.
I'll ask him for
bring
one.
Bring me one. if you bring me one, I will wear it.
I will ask them for a shirt for you just to promote them on the podcast. We're gonna promote the Gambling Group Chat though, because that is next. It's Bear, it's Will Hill, it's Sammy P, and it's me, Jeff Schwartz. The most fun we have each week is going through this Gambling Group Chat with all the things college football. Here it is for you guys to listen to. Hope you guys enjoyed it as well.
Gambling Group Chat is back. Myself, Jeff, Will Hill, Sammy P. And the thing that everyone obviously cares about this time of year, first and foremost, college football playoff rankings. Ohio State, number 1 again in the college football playoff rankings. So I'm just going to ask the question, Sammy. Is Ohio State really the best team in the country? You don't have them power rated number 1, do you?
Nope. Michigan 1, Oregon 2, Ohio State 3. And then if Bowers is in, I'd put Georgia 3, Ohio State 4. It's funny. I knew we were going to talk about this. I didn't even look at the rankings, like the CFB show. Like, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me because it will all figure itself out. But no, I've risen Oregon the most in the last month. That win against, or that 3-point loss against Washington looks more impressive by the minute. Again, Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia. But I would move Georgia up just a hair with Bowers on the field.
Yeah, and there's a rumor that he could potentially play on Saturday as well. I guess that's my point. Like, I'll ask Jeff, I'll ask Will the same thing. Do you really think Ohio State's the best team in the country? Because I sure as heck don't.
No, not with that offense, not with that quarterback. And I think this has kind of been the theme. Really, we spotted this early on in the year where there is no, like, great team. It's sort of like the NFL where, oh, the 49ers are the best team. Then they lose a few games in a row. I guess it's this team. I guess it's that team. We sort of go back and forth with it. One week it looks like Georgia. The next week it doesn't. So it makes it fun. It's wide open. There is no, like, pound your fist on the table and say, this is absolutely the best team. This isn't the Georgia of last couple years. It's not Bama of years past. There's no dominant team. So, got a few weeks left. It should be a fun finish. It's kind of wide open here. It makes it fun.
The debates are obviously very fun. We understand that, right? It's part of why the rankings are released each week, right? So we can debate this. But in the end, guys, all these teams play each other, right? Michigan plays Ohio State. Alabama's on track to play Georgia. Oregon's on track to play Washington again. It'll all sort itself out. Obviously, Texas doesn't have someone in that top six to play, but it'll all sort itself out. So you can be really angry about Oregon being 6 versus Alabama being 7 and Texas, 8, or be angry that Georgia's not here and Ohio State's not here, but it's all going to settle itself out. It's all going to play out. We're all going to get these games in the next 3 or 4 weeks, and we can see what happens on the field. And to me, the questions become then, obviously, if there's a bunch of teams that are 12-1, we get to that point in a couple of weeks. But right now, everyone plays each other. Everyone's sort of where they're supposed to be. We can debate again if Oregon should be the one loss team that's the first one. If they're eighth and Alabama's 6th, guess what? If Alabama beats Georgia, guys, they're in the playoff, right? Do we agree on that? If Alabama is a 12-1 SC champion, they're in the playoff.
I'm glad you said that because you mentioned the 12-1 teams. There is no world that exists in which Alabama and Texas are both 12-1 conference champions and Alabama goes above Texas. That world does not exist. Texas beat them by double digits in Tuscaloosa. It wasn't close. Yes, it was early in the year, but they played. It's the ultimate tiebreak right there. 12-1 champ. So, like, there's no way Alabama can go to the playoff and Texas doesn't. Like that would be the biggest crime of like the college football playoff era. But, like, now that gets into, we can play out a bunch of hypotheticals with the scenarios.
What's the worst one? What's the one that causes the most headache? Because you're good at coming up with these. What's the one like the committee's worst nightmare? Where it's like this happens, this happens, that happens.
I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, what one do you have? Because I have two.
It's Florida State winning out. Mm-hmm. It's the Big Ten champ undefeated, mm-hmm. and it's Oregon, Texas, and Alabama all went out. And that's
and Georgia would be 12-1 as well.
12-1.
They'd probably be the first.
Oregon would be out. So you'd have Oregon as a number 2 power rated team. Possibly number 1 at that point, Oregon would be out. It's that simple. Oregon's not in that situation.
I think the other one is, and I'd love to get your opinion, Sammy and Will as well. You got undefeated Florida State, undefeated Michigan, undefeated Georgia, Texas and Oregon are 12-1. What happens now?
Because Oregon's out. I'm just telling you, Oregon's not going to be in. We know this already. You smile. You guys know. We've watched the college football play. This is the first week, guys, in college football history where a Pac-12 school got a tiny bit of a bump over an SEC program or Texas, and people lost their minds over it. Like, this is, we know how this is going to happen. Oregon's going to be left out. It is what it is. I'm not upset about it. Just, that's the truth of it. I've been a Pac-12 fan my entire life. I know how this goes. Oregon would be left out.
Do you think so, Sammy? Because, like, all year long, the Pac-12 has gotten immense amount of respect, and you've had all these teams ranked highly all year. And I think people view the Pac-12 as a better league than the Big 12. Like, I don't know if that's a slam dunk. That one would worry me if I were Texas. What do you think, Sammy? Am I right or wrong?
Which scenario are we talking about again? They all run together.
You just gave basically, like, different things. Yeah, I'm sorry. We threw a lot out at you. Florida State, Michigan, Georgia undefeated, Texas, Oregon 12-1 conference champs.
I don't know, man. I mean, I can tell you who's going to be favored. I don't know. Nor do I. Like I said off the top, I don't care. I don't care. Just give me the four teams. We'll make the numbers from there.
Oh, I care. I mean,
Well, just for context, sir, like, let's say Florida State gets in and plays Oregon, right? Like, you guys can decide who goes 1, 2, 3, 4. I can tell you right now, Oregon is probably a 5.5, 6-point favorite on Florida State on a neutral. So that just speaks to the power rating of Oregon. Yeah, 6.5. I would say 5.5, 6, 6.5. Somewhere under 7, but close to 7.
And that's what gets me, Will, because we hear about, oh, odds shouldn't be determining who's in the playoff and ranking and who is not. But aren't the odds and the spread, the lines on the games, an indicator of power ratings, which power ratings are an indicator of who are the best teams in the country? Shouldn't that come into some type of play or thought process? I know the committee would never do it, but isn't like that a truer indicator of best four as opposed to this most deserving best four kind of conglomeration mishmash of what the committee's given us?
Well, first off, I'm not one to overreact, but I think our Miami to make the playoffs bet might be in a little bit of trouble that we made a month or so. I don't think that one's getting in.
I think we're done.
The counter to that would be, all right, why play the games? Just go based on power ratings, and who cares if you lose 2 games, 3 games? Like, the endings of these games have to matter. Whether you make the kick in overtime or miss the kick, it doesn't affect your power rating in overtime if you lose by 3 or win by 3, but winning or losing should matter. Otherwise, why are we watching? I guess that would be my counter.
Jeff? Well, yeah, but in the end, the win, if we're talking about, you know, to settle a tie, basically, right, of teams that are 12-1 that have all won their game. So not understand. People that are listening now, I think, to our show understand how power rankings work, and Sammy's explained them basically each week, but I don't think people realize, like, how lines are made. I think they just sort of think that people sit in a room like we, us four do, just draw up the line and put it on a board. And so if people understood how they were made, I think people would be more welcome to the idea of a neutral power ranking system being the one that, you know, determines playoff. Now, obviously, with a 12-team playoff next year, most of the discussion is moot. We're arguing about 3-loss teams, which is silly to me about a playoff structure. But nonetheless, I think that would solve a lot of the issues if people knew what power rankings were and how lines were determined.
So that being said, well, Michigan State College undefeated after Saturday. Can I interest anybody in Michigan laying 4.5 at Penn State, or are we thinking dog here, Sammy?
I would probably lay it before I'd play the dog. This just whole, like, hornet's nest thing where you want to just fly in there and just rattle Michigan's thing for the last 2-3 weeks, if not longer. It just feels sort of personal at this point in time, and now we still don't know, like, which teams are throwing daggers at other teams. It's been reported that Ohio State and Ryan Day had something to do with this, and he has denied it, but then another report said he did do it. I just feel like if Harbaugh has the chance, he's going to run this thing up. And my concern stylistically in the game, not power rating, is that Penn State can't, like, move the ball down the field. I think there's concerns about Aller, as my cat tends to agree. I think the cat likes Michigan too. I'm going to silence that toy here in a second, but it feels like it's a game where Penn State could really struggle to throw the ball down the field. And I was talking to a scout who says Michigan might have 6 NFL players on defense this year and next year go in the draft. That is insanity to me how good they are on D.
Penn State's pretty good on D too. This just screams under to me. It'd be interesting if Penn State realized early on, it reminds me of the Ohio State game, which was just very methodical and low scoring. You know, at what point do you realize, hey, we can't run the ball, so we're going to try to take some chances down the field? To me, it's an under 45. To me, this is like a, I don't know, 20-13, 21-14 type of game. Under 45 is a play for me.
My thought on this game is maybe there's a play on Penn State first half, because this is Michigan's first time this season basically playing anyone that has a pulse, and they're on the road. Penn State's a good football team. Now, everything you guys have said about their offense is absolutely true, but this feels like a situation that it's tied at 10 at halftime, and just like last season, the second half belongs to the better football team in Michigan. Like that's sort of how I see this game going out, where Michigan struggles a little bit early, hostile environment, on the road, playing a good football team for the first time the entire season, and then eventually their talent, once they sort of get accustomed to the gameplay, ends up taking over in the end. And so I think Michigan, I would almost play maybe Penn State first half, Michigan full game. I think that's sort of how this game goes.
Yeah, I think my first line when I handicap this game is, question I is, how many points can Penn State realistically score? I think that kind of goes in line with both what Will and Sammy were saying. Like, I just looked right now. I just fired under 20.5, and I paid -130 at DraftKings. 19.5 is 105. But like, I think like 20 points is like max for Penn. Like, if they get 20, I would.
Is it 10 against Ohio State? So they scored.
Was that what it was? It was whatever it was. Yeah. It shouldn't even have been that.
The thing about their offense, and again, this is things we've talked about before, is like when you play good defense like Michigan or any good defense, you have to be able to generate explosive plays, right? Like you cannot go down the field against Michigan and just go like 3 yards, 6 yards, 2 yards, 8 yards.
20 to 12.
Like,
sorry.
You're right. You can't just like, you have to have these chunk offensive plays, and they don't do that, guys. They don't produce those plays. And so to me, I don't think they score enough. But I think it's valid to say Michigan might come out a little slow because they haven't played a team like this all season.
Bigger chance of an upset. We talked about potentially Alabama, Georgia steamrolling to the SEC title game. I don't think we've had a matchup of two teams undefeated in conference play since that 2009 Alabama Florida game. I think that's correct off the top of my head. So you got Alabama's undefeated in the SEC. You've got Georgia who's undefeated in the SEC. Is Alabama maybe in a tricky spot this week off that big emotional game against LSU, knocked Daniels out and just kind of pulled away in the second half? And now you got Georgia, who they're going to face an Ole Miss team that is the best team that they face this year. They were kind of in a game last week against Missouri. Either of these two teams on upset alert? And if so, who do you think it might be, Will?
I like Kentucky plus the 10.5. I bet him plus 10.5 for all the reasons you mentioned. Letdown spot. Sounds like Leary's good to go for Kentucky. He didn't play well for most of the year, but remember, he's coming off a chest injury or a pec injury or whatever it was, and started to look a little better the last few weeks. If he's good to go, again, this is a little bit of a sleepy spot, a letdown spot. Kentucky might be a little better than people think. I could see this being a tight game. I still don't think, and we talked about this all year, and they've gotten better. I still don't think this is like a vintage Bama team, a vintage defense. They don't have the explosive guys at receiver. They're not as great at offensive line, quarterback. I mean, you just go up and down the roster. It's a good team. It's just not a great Bama team. I think we're looking at a close game here, and Bama's starting to get that little sleeper where everyone's like, oh, I like them at 9-1 to win it all. I like them at 6-1. They're starting to get a little bit of a buzz in terms of that. So I could definitely see this being a tight game here.
Sam, any thoughts on either of the SEC games?
Yeah, I think his point about Leary is legit. Like, I wish he was healthy. Clearly he's not. He's going to probably try and give it a go, but he couldn't see the play sheet last week. I mean, that's not ideal. I made Georgia Mississippi 8.5 fair. So anything over 10 feels fair there. Yeah, well, I mean, you're gonna make Georgia more expensive because people are gonna bet Georgia. But my true number there is sub 10. So I'd probably take Ole Miss before I take Kentucky, but I'm not taking money line. Like, I'd much rather have the number, right? Much rather have that point spread than have Mississippi money line.
I think both those schools probably have a hangover early on, but end up winning this game in the end. The thing about Ole Miss, guys, like, when does Kiffin win this game? Like, has he won this game in his career? Right. He doesn't win this game. Yeah. They've been close. They get close a lot. But Georgia's season, like, Georgia ends up winning these games. As far as Alabama, I think you guys are exactly right about the sleepy situation. It's a 12 noon kickoff in Kentucky after a big win. They're going to start slow. We see this all the time in college football, right? They're going to start slow, but the talent of their team will sort of overtake Kentucky in the end. I would take the points with both these. I don't feel strongly about them, but if you're asking my opinion, I think the points is the way to go in both these games.
What about the points out in Austin this week, Jeff? It was funny. I actually had someone text me this week. When was the last time Oregon, or USC rather, was this big of an underdog? And
did you look it up?
Oh, I knew what it was off the top of my head.
When was it?
2011. Yeah. Because it was someone who was associated.
They beat us that year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they beat us, yeah.
Yeah, it was someone who was associated with the team back then.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not gonna give you the answer to that.
So here's the deal, guys. This is going to be a bloodbath. I'll just put it simply. Like, Oregon's going to win this game by a lot of points. It's going to be
more than 15?
Yes. It's going to be somewhere in, like, the 55 to 28 range is my guess. USC changed the defensive coordinator. I was reading some quotes from the new defensive coordinator. Quote, "We might just have one call all game." Okay. Good luck. Like, I don't mean, like, I don't know. And I'll tell you what, when Caleb Williams and this USC offense has played like defenses, right? Notre Dame and Utah, 20 points against Notre Dame in a pretty sloppy game, only 25 against Utah. Remember, they had the pick six in that game that got him back into that game. Oregon's defense is just as good and probably better than Utah's and just as good as Notre Dame's. Like, I just think this can be a struggle for USC here. Oregon feels like they're sort of on a mission since that Washington game. So, I mean, I'll hope my goal is to be sleeping on the East Coast Bear as Ty Thompson scores a 63rd point for Oregon in a 30-point victory for the Ducks. That's my dream of this weekend.
I hope your dream becomes reality.
Thank you.
I want to see you be in a good mood and be well rested for the NFL on Sunday.
I will not get to see all your trolling texts though, thankfully, because I'll hopefully be sleeping.
That's a problem. Will, you're laying the points here at Autzen? You're allowed to say
USC's
no.
USC's going to move the ball. USC's going to move the ball on anybody. It's just I don't know if Oregon's going to punt this entire game. So what's a team total for Oregon? That might be the better way to play it, just because I think Oregon might score every single time they touch the ball, basically.
It's 44.5 or 45, somewhere around there. At least it was.
I wonder if USC just might be better on defense. I'm looking for the team total, by the way, to confirm Jeff's thoughts. Over 44.5 is 130. Over 45.5 is 105. I wonder if USC at some point just might be better off on defense doing either two things. Number one, onside kick after every score, or B, try and sneak a 12th man out there on the field on defense and just see if the officials just kind of see it out there, because like it clearly doesn't work. I mean, it's embarrassing how bad they are.
No, I mean, we're joking, but that's the best strategy, to onside kick every time. You get one out of every, I don't know, three of them. Do you have a better chance of getting that or getting a stop? I don't think that's crazy at all, honestly.
You could really talk yourself out of a winner here. I think we're all on the same page that Oregon's going to boat this team. But if you really wanted to get like super cute, you could start talking yourself into the over because USC can't stop anybody. Or maybe you like the under because USC's not going to score on Oregon. Like, I feel like without overthinking it too much, you just lay the points here. This feels like a dead dog walking. And my big concern with USC, do they even care anymore? I mean, you got three losses. The quarterback's going to the NFL. Who knows where Lincoln Riley's going to end up in the next couple of years. I feel like everything has gone wrong for them this year. Everything went right last year. Everything is going wrong this year. And if they get down, 21-7, do they have the care? Do they actually give a damn to not get blown off the field? And I don't know that answer right now.
I think you said something that I think maybe people at the start of the year kind of forgot about, was last year, how friggin' lucky they were all year long with the turnover luck.
Plus 21 turnover margin.
And that's how they were winning games. And it I don't want to say masked how bad their defense was, because everybody knew how bad they're, but because they at least got some turnovers, it was like, okay, maybe we're not going to allow 50 today. We're only going to allow 38. But I think one of those things obviously regressing and coming back to the norm this year definitely hurt them. And I don't think you need to say years with Lincoln Riley as well, Sammy. It might be a matter of weeks.
Ooh,
weeks or
breaking
weeks or
news
months.
Here.
Yeah,
Lincoln Riley's going to be.
I don't know. You hear things every now and then that he might be moving on to the NFL next year. So we'll see what happens. All right. I think your Pennix bet is coming down to one game. I think the winner of the Pac-12 championship game between Oregon and Washington, I think either Bo Nix or Michael Penix will wind up winning the Heisman Trophy, Sammy. So I think you're probably going to be in a position where maybe you play a little Bo Nix bag of 20. We talked about that last week, and someone said, like, who is the one guy you wish you had? And it was Bo Nix, because I had JJ at 25-1. I had Daniels at 35-1. Now the Daniels ticket's unfortunately dead, but I think it's either going to be Bo or Penix, the winner of that Pac-12 championship game.
I'm rolling the dice, buddy. I'm done hedging that thing. I have a little McCarthy, and they're going to run into some offensive issues, not only against Penn State, but against Ohio State too. I mean, they've been playing like Mississippi State, East, West, North for 2 months. They're going to have some offensive adversity for McCarthy. I don't think he's going to put up big numbers in either of those games. So at this point, it is what it is. I'm going to sweat it out until the very end, and I hope Penix gets it done.
What would you make Texas USC if you knew Quinn Ewers was going to play? How much do you think that line would go up, Sam? Because I see, 10.5 right now, Texas USC? Like if news broke I see 10 in a lot of places, 10.5 at Circa, and 10 pretty much everywhere else. If what do you think Ewers is worth to that line?
Yeah, you're talking this weekend against TCU, right?
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I mean, it's sort of a halfway number. I mean, we saw the reports. I think it was Bruce Feldman came out and said that he's trending in the right direction. So I think this number was sort of a halfway, maybe like 11.5, 12. And then I think the bigger drop is if he's out. You know, I think there's this expectation in Vegas that he might be able to give it a go. So it's not going to blow to 14. It's just not. I would think, though, if he doesn't play, we're talking about maybe an eight. Eight's possible. I think there's a bigger change if he's out than if he's in.
Is Texas getting through this TCU-Iowa straight stretch, both road games without a loss? Are they making it through, you think? Does it matter at quarterback who plays to get through this stretch? Or are they going to just drop one because that's sort of how college football works?
I think it might matter in terms of Texas is kind of this year's TCU.
Yeah.
With the close games that they had, you lose a quarterback and just kind of coming from a little bit off of a down year. But I think from some of the decision making that Malik Murphy has made and some of the turnovers that have happened with him under center, like, that would have to worry you, I think, going on the road. Maybe not this week, because I think TCU's defense is really bad. But I think maybe next week in Ames, that could be the one potentially to trip Texas up, if indeed they are going to lose. I think the bigger question is going to be, like, who ultimately is going to wind up being their opponent in the Big 12 championship game. Like, Oklahoma State, like we talked before, I think they are ripe for an upset this week. A UCF team that finally won a league game last year should have beaten Oklahoma and Norman. Like Will, isn't it UCF plus the 2.5 here, or a pass against Oklahoma State?
Yep, I'm with you. UCF, look, they're -5 in turnovers, I think, on the season. Oklahoma State is plus five, so sometimes that sort of normalizes, and there's some regression coming there. I still can't get the South Alabama game out of my head early in the season. Like, that team is in there somewhere. I know they played better since, but yeah, I like UCF. I'm glad I'm not going against you, because my picks have been pretty good on here, but every time I go against you, it doesn't work out for me. I need to just stop fading you. I need to respect my elders and just stay away from your picks.
I was going to say that 55-3, I think, might have taught you a little lesson there last week.
Yes, I think you guys could sense in my handicap, I didn't have a lot of conviction. I was like, you know what, Arizona State, they've both been good to me. I'm just going to keep riding them. I got off a little... I stayed on a little too long, although Jeff, give him credit in our group chat and in real life, our text thread. He's like, hey, Arizona State's quarterback's hurt. Let's bet team total under. And that was a pretty easy one. I guess we got some help from the officiating, according to Jeff, but that was one that got home. So it helps to be paying attention.
Yeah, that thing about live wagering, right? If you're like watching Pac-12 Network, you're the only person, you know, west of the Rockies, east of the Rockies watching Pac-12 Network, it helps out to see when injuries. I'm against you this weekend, Will, though, because I think Colorado covers against Arizona. I know you're in Arizona this week, but this is a dead spot for Arizona. Two straight home games against ranked opponents. You win both of those. You're on the road to Colorado, who's not very good, at the 12 mountain kickoff on Pac-12 Network. And then you host Utah the following weekend. This is a dead spot for Arizona. I don't love Colorado, but they keep breaking my, you know, they covered last week again. They covered UCLA. I think Colorado covers the 10.5 this weekend.
Yeah, I've had a decent feel for Colorado. And sorry, we made that under 5.5 bet last week in terms of wins, which, look, we still got a couple more to go here. So I got a little tight. I took them plus the points. That was not easy. They backdoored you a couple times the past couple weeks. But I just think Arizona is still underrated. This is a legitimately good team. You know, we talked last week. Maybe they're, you know, I'll say this. If you ask an Arizona fan, you know, they're – you give them true serum, they will tell you they're the second best team in the Pac-12. Whether they are or not, I'm not sure, but this is a really good team. I think Colorado just has so many flaws, offensive line, defense. I don't think this game is competitive, so I laid it with Arizona.
Arizona, really, really well-coached team there, Will, yes. with Jed Fish.
Very well-coached staff that he has around team. Yes, him. He's not going to be – I don't think he's going to be there long, too. I mean, I don't know what jobs are coming open, but to me, he's one of these guys. Him, you know, the Kansas coach, there's a couple of these guys that are just not going to be able to – Elko at Duke, a couple of these guys are going to be destined for bigger jobs.
Duke was a team I'm looking to fade this week against UNC. I without Riley Leonard, they got major quarterback issues, and I think the kind of the spot for UNC this week with May's final home game, kind of losing a couple of games in ugly fashion like they did. This could be a get-right game against a rival in Duke that may not have been as good as a lot of people thought they were earlier in the year. Sammy, what's sticking out to you? What do you really got? We came up a little short last week with Brown, which is fine. We're still well up on the Ivy League, but anything on the board, what strikes your fancy?
Yeah, we could save the rotation number, I think, for the very end. I love this Friday night game in Dallas. SMU laying 17 in North Texas. I don't think Stone's going to play for SMU, Bear, but they really like this backup. And I had somebody tell me in Vegas that SMU has six guys who could score touchdowns on any play. North Texas has two. And I thought that was a funny way to look at it. I don't know that that's, you know, true or false, but, you know, even with the backup who they allegedly really like at SMU, they're going to get 45 in this game. That's a big number, 17. I know people don't want to lay 17 on a Friday night maybe, but North Texas is awful. And I don't think I had them downgraded enough. So I'm going to lay 17 here. It's probably going to close a little bit higher. We're starting to see it get a little pricey on the favorite, like minus 15 in a couple places. So I think 120 SMU is a very good bet. 45-20, 45-17, something like that. North Texas is not very good there.
Who doesn't want to lay 17 on a Friday night? I want to meet these people. I'll happily lay 17 on a Friday night. Have it on as I'm dozing off in my hotel room in State College easily. Will, what else you got out there besides Colorado?
Thought we covered everything. Texas Tech, I think, getting four. I think they're getting healthier. I think Morton's getting healthier. I think they'll be able to run the ball against Kansas. To me, +3.5, +4. I think there's some +4s out there. I do like Texas Tech +4 too.
One game we haven't mentioned, Utah-Washington. I mean, we hit on USC-Oregon, but can Washington obviously going to be facing a much better defense this week than they did last week. Can Utah go to Seattle and kind of play the USC game plan against that Washington offense and kind of ugly that game up? It's 9.5. Would you take the Utes in this game +9.5, Jeff?
I never thought I'd say this about a Utah team this year, but I actually like the over in this game. It might be the first over I've mostly played most of the year. Like, I just think that you look at Washington's defense, it's not very good, and there's not a lot of depth there. And again, they've been buoyed by fourth down defensive success and a couple turnover luck, especially against USC. I mean, you know, that fumble by Caleb Williams is kind of hold the ball out there like a loaf of bread, really turned that game, right? And so I think their defense was 100 and something in havoc rate. They're 96th on third down. I think Utah can move the ball enough by running the football and doing basically the USC game plan. On the flip side, I just don't think Utah's defense is equipped to stop Washington very much. You know, Washington struggles on offense when you get pressure up the middle. Utah's best edge rushers are in outside and against Washington's tackles, who are very good. Like, I think Washington's going to score somewhere in the high 30s and 40s, sort of like how Oregon did. I think Utah will get somewhere in the 20s in this game. So I have the over, which is Utah's hasn't gone over very much this season, but I think their offense is playing a tad better lately against a bad Washington defense. I like the over in this one.
Sammy, how low does it need to go for you to consider going over? Iowa, 28. Seeing 28s pop there on the total. How low does that need to go to even have you consider going over in that game against the State University of New Jersey?
I don't know, 27. I just pulling. Can we rewind a second? As Jeff was saying, he loved the over in Utah, Washington. It got steamed under. I'm not even kidding. Like, it's, you know, in this total, I'm not even making this up. As he's talking about how much he loves the over, it's like, bing, 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 under.
It was like 53 yesterday, right? Was it? Yeah.
It opened 49 now? 54.5 in Vegas. And now it's, you know, it's tumbling. It's like 50 at some shops, 49.5 offshore. You couldn't have timed that any better, buddy. That was amazing.
That's fantastic. I'm still taking the over now. I get a better number now. Let's go over again. Let's hit it again.
Just wait it out. I mean, well, maybe not wait it out, but if you got 50, go over 50, please.
Yeah, I'm seeing delay. I see 50.5 at Caesars is what I see, and then 50.5 offshore as well.
That's a low number.
But I say Sammy's got a better odds feed than I do. The big player over there, the big odds for Don Best or whatever. Spank odds, whatever he's got. We're working out there. Well, you want to go over 28?
That was my answer. I'd go over 27, Bear. If you give me a 27 on Rutgers, Iowa, I could dabble.
You can push it 17-10. That game.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the betting aspect, when you get these really low totals of it, I like to play the first quarter under. Sometimes they hang a 7, sometimes a 7.5 juice with these like Army, Air Force, Army, Navy games, because I want to avoid the overtime. I want to avoid, hey, we can't run the ball. And then we have to, you know, one of these teams gets down 10 points that has to throw the ball. Well, they can't throw the ball. That's when bad things happen. You get pick sixes. So sometimes the first quarter, they come out conservative. You just see like a, you know, a 3-0 first quarter. So if you see a 7, a 7.5, I don't know if quarter lines are up, but I think sometimes these are the best way to play these really low totals, first quarter under.
I guess just for the sake of just getting another game in there, Miami, Florida State. Any chance Miami can keep this close? I mean, their offense has been so bad in recent weeks, and now you're going against
Van Dyke healthy?
Florida State team. I don't know. Like, you hear like people talking about, like, does he know the difference between injured and hurt, and does he just have the yips? Like, it just, but something has to be going on there. It can't just be because they did not take a knee at the end of the Georgia Tech game, that they suddenly can't find themselves on offense and things are good. Something clearly is amiss there, Jeff, right?
I think it has to be. By the way, Will, it's,
it has to be what?
It's 6.5 right now for Iowa Rutgers first quarter totals, what I see on DraftKings.
No, you got to, I can't do it under the, I need the 7. I need to push if there's some fluke touchdowns. So if you shop around, maybe you can find a 7. I don't want to give out a number that doesn't exist, but I just mean like just in general, when you see these low totals, yeah. I look for the first quarter under. And if you see the 7, 7.5, that's when I go under. But 6.5, I mean, that's just not a pleasant experience to sit there for a half hour and root for nothing to happen.
Sure,
absolutely, like no scoring.
Sure it is.
Okay, back to Miami very quickly. You said after they lost to Georgia Tech that the history of Miami is they kind of go in the tank after a loss like that. That's exactly what happened, right? They've gone the tank since then. And I thought they would sort of regroup and get back at it. But look, if you're hoping for maybe some clarity in the CFP rankings, you know, Florida State losing would certainly clear up a lot of things. And maybe Miami is that team to do that. We've seen Mario Cristobal teams in the past sort of pull off upsets after looking not so great at other points of the season. But I just know Miami had 6 points last weekend, right? Like they 6 points ain't going to cut against Florida State. I think Florida State, I don't know what the numbers right now for this
14
game.
14.5.
14. I don't know how Miami wins this game. It would be great. I'm rooting for Florida State to lose at some point, just as a fan of a Pac-12 school that wants some clarity at the top of the thing. But it's not happening this weekend.
I think that's the thing that, to kind of go full circle from where we started with the rankings, like, I think Florida State's the team that has the least margin. Like, I think they need to be undefeated to get, I don't think they're going to win one of these one loss debates because of the way the SEC is down this year. And Will, speak for yourself on rooting for nothing to happen. I sat through 90 minutes on Wednesday afternoon during an Inter Salzburg Champions League match, sitting on under 2.5, and we got a nice 1-0 result. So I was rooting for nothing to happen there.
I'm really happy for you. That's funny because I didn't get a text. I don't know if Jeff and Sammy got a text. So nice that you keep the winners to yourself. No. That's really great.
I got a text at the 71st minute. Who said it's 0-0 right now. My bet's going great. Yeah, I got a text at that 71st minute.
Very helpful.
It was good. It was great.
Is Ohio State capable with that offense of covering 31.5? Am I crazy to kind of like Michigan State? Is that too many points? Ohio State. Yeah.
It feels like a lot. That's a good call. It does feel like a lot because I don't know. Like in years past, you knew Ohio State could easily go out there and win 52-7. I don't know if this is a 52-7 type of Ohio State team. I agree.
I laugh at the total. The spread is 31. The total's 47. So they're saying Michigan State's just not going to do anything, basically.
Well, they got their win last week, and hopefully we can give people a bunch of wins this week. But we got to continue tradition here, Sammy. Wrap it up with take us to the FCS. Anything?
These are 2-1, just for the record. My mentions and my DMs would indicate that these are 0-8, but they are actually 2-1 on the show, believe it or not. We're going to go to the Patriot League, Jeff's favorite conference after the Pac-12. The Patriot League, we're going to go to 308-927. It's Fordham and Lafayette. I think it's going to open high 50s, maybe 60. I would still go over at 60. These two offenses hum it. They are very good. They get touchdowns. They don't kick field goals. I think this is going to open a little bit low, like high 50s, maybe a 60. We're going to go over.
I love it. Well, you know the way the bookkeeping works, guys. The wins count for like a half, and the losses count for like 2.
Yes.
So that's the way it all works out. So.
Every time.
I will
appreciate
say, though,
you guys.
No, you're right. But our audience is actually, we have a great audience because you get a lot of good feedback, you know, Twitter, and people seem to love the show and appreciate the pick. So I think our audience has been pretty good.
No, you're right. We do appreciate the people chiming in, and we try and get back to as many people as we can. So hopefully 308-927 will be another winner for us. Hopefully a lot more winners than that. Always appreciate your time. And until next week, have a great weekend, guys.
Bear, at halftime of Iowa Northwestern, it was 0-0.
It was awesome.
Halftime of USC Washington had 63 points. The same sport. That's what they tell me.
And it's not the same sport.
It's not the same sport.
I wanted Iowa Northwestern to end scoreless so bad. I was genuinely disappointed.
Just 2-0. That would have been the lowest score. 2-0, right? That could have been the lowest. There's no like 1-point weird correct. College football yeah, rule. Exactly. We get a single point for some reason.
Safety.
That's safety. Oh god, 2-0 would have just set the internet on fire. But we're gonna set your picks are gonna be on fire this week. We're getting back to some winning ways. Hopefully. Let's recap where Bear is at before we get to both our best bets here. Bear has UTSA -14.5. He has Old Dominion +13.5. Wake Forest +2.5. North Carolina -14. Cincinnati +2.5, and Charlotte +10. Bear, best bet. Where are you going?
I kind of alluded to it with Will there in the group chat. UCF get +2.5 against Oklahoma State. You got Oklahoma State, which is 1-5 in a row. 4 of them is an underdog. Coming off of that Bedlam game last week, you would think that this is a very predictable flat spot for the Cowboys. You got road game against UCF, road game against Houston, and then BYU. That's what stands between Oklahoma State and getting to the Big 12 title game. Like, I don't think this is an easy game for them at all. UCF nearly won in Norman. Like I said, they're clearly a different team with John Rhys Plumlee at quarterback. Very dangerous game, UCF coming off that win last week against Cincinnati. I think there's something to build off with some of the games that they've had lately. Give me UCF +2.5.
Are they winning this game outright?
I think there's a very good chance they win the game.
Yeah.
So I'd take, echo on our conversation from earlier, I take UCF plus the points and then maybe throw them in a little bit of a round robin or just with some money lines as well.
Yeah, the round robin's fun. It's a fun round. It's fun to do that. All right, my best bet, I'm not going to do Arizona this week. I've done that 2 straight weeks. They've hit for me, unfortunately.
Worked out well.
I like Colorado, though, this week. So my best bet is the under in the Rose Bowl. It's UCLA, Arizona State, under 44.5. Arizona State lost 55-3 against Utah.
Yes, they did.
They entered the game with 6 offensive linemen. They left with 5. They entered the game with 1 quarterback-ish, and they ended with their running back playing quarterback for the fourth quarter.
I'm told that's a problem.
It's a problem, and I don't think Trent Borgay is going to play. They're down with Shada.
Is my man Scadabo taking snaps under center?
So he was the one who was playing quarterback for the fourth quarter. He actually completed a pass.
Yeah.
He completed like a 15-yard pass down the sideline. Arizona State is not going to score. UCLA has the best defensive line in the country generating pressure. They're really good. They have a top 10 pick in Law 2. And then on their offensive side of the ball, it appears that Dante Moore and Ethan Garbers are healthy, but the offense is not good right now.
The problem with your under, that's
the Dante Moore interception. And as Dante Moore is throwing three pick sixes, but this is Arizona State's defense. It's like they're okay. They're not great, but the Dante Moore interceptions could ruin me. Like that cost me 2 UCLA wagers this season. I just think this game is going to be, 24-7. Like it might not even get in the 40s. It might not even be a sweat. So that's my best bet out west in the Pac-12. I was going to take Oregon -15, but I figured I'd made my case earlier about how I feel about that game.
Yeah, you hate betting on your team or betting on games that you're at. So that
also game when I'm going to be hopefully sleeping by the end of it. So because it's a late kickoff, I'm blaming you because you told me it'd be a day game and you lied to me.
I thought for sure it would be a day game.
Yeah, you lied to me there.
I did not think it would be Pac-12 after dark.
It's way after dark.
Yeah, really, really, really,
really late after dark. All right, that's it. Those are our wagers for today. For the weekend.
Well, hopefully the best bet there with UCF is as easy as last week's best bet was with
Utah.
Utah.
That was over fast.
That worked out well.
We made a lot of money that game because of the injury to Borgay. I bet Utah -17.5. I bet Utah second half. I bet Arizona. Yeah,
you were right away. You were like ASU quarterback out.
And yes.
Like, okay. That's a good thing. So crazy this playoff stuff. I'm just trying to figure out how
Well, we should be very angry at all times about playoff rankings. They really matter. We should be angry,
exactly,
angry about it.
But you think about the wagers and the wagers that you have when you made them, that they were good bets, and like, if your Oregon situation.
Well, Miami bet wasn't good.
No, the Miami bet wasn't good, but like the Oregon to make the playoff, and like if they don't make it, and yeah, that's going to be a hard one to swallow. So another edition of Big Noon Kickoff's Bear Bets in the book. Appreciate everybody for chiming in, watching, listening, downloading, subscribing, rating, reviewing. As Will said, we do have some great listeners, and we appreciate everybody who interacts with us, and we try and get back to as many people as we can on Twitter. So until next time, remember, the less you bet, the more you lose when you win.